Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. It's good to be back from a fabulous trip to Peru, and where we visited Machu Picchu and other Inca ruins. We then spent 8 days in Buenos Aires, including a 2-day side trip to the incomparable Iguazu Falls, but I'll talk more on that later. And I was thinking after this trip that I'd like to review a few traveling trips for those considering foreign travel. So today will be what we like to call a solo-sode. Paul may step in every now and then with a question, and that will be fine. And it will be me sharing from my multiple travel experiences overseas, and then more particularly on my recent trip to South America. After all, this is the next chapter, and it is a place where you discover how you might move more knowledgeably to your next chapter, even if it's a little 1 to 3 week vacation. So let's get this show on the road. I've got some ideas of what we're going to do. We're going to talk about before you leave, after you arrive, and then, given our time, I want to tell you a little bit about Peru and Argentina, which is were absolutely amazing. It's my first trip to South America. I've not even been to Central America. I've been to Mexico, but it's my first time in the Americas because I spent so much time in Europe. But before you leave, I've broken this down into packing, preparation, and that's it. Packing and preparation. So preparation. There's two types of preparations that you can do in your plans. There's a highly planned trip, and there's a loosely planned trip. Now, when I travel with my wife, such as this, it's going to be a highly planned trip. She wants to make sure she knows exactly where we're staying, when we're getting into a place, what we're going to visit, what the sites are, how close we are to the sites. And what we did on this trip, the very first time we have ever used a travel agency. And we used a travel agency for Peru because we knew it is so different than Europe or the United States that we might have a hard time communicating and getting along with people. So we use this group, and I am getting no money, no receipts from this, but I've got to tell you, if you're going to travel to South America or Peru or Central America, it is called Peru for Less. Is that what it's called? Peru for Less? Yes, I believe that's what it's called. It's Peru for Less. And James Gilmore is the guy who guided us through this. And they were absolutely amazing. They were incredible. They took us, as a matter of fact, they picked us up at the airport to walk us across the street to the airport hotel.
Oh, wow. How did you find him?
It was weird. I was looking up traveling to Peru online, and they must have some little widget, cat or something in the web system that found out that I was looking for a trip to South America. And they contacted me.
Oh, there you go. Right.
So it was through their little creepy crawlers on the web, and they turned out to be amazing. We had private guides. One time we went with 8 people, one time we went with 4 people, and the rest of the time it was my wife and I with a private guide going all the way through the whole Peruvian trip.
What's the plus side of doing it that way? What's the downside? Because you've done just solo, where you just get in a plane and just go and wander the world. You've done highly organized things. Must be pluses and minuses to both of those.
Well, I think it depends on our familiarity with the language and with the culture of the people. Europe is, although quite different than the United States, there's enough similarity that you can do that on your own. You can figure that out on your own. You can get your places to stay. But when you go to some place that's completely foreign, like perhaps if we're considering Japan, we will then probably work through a tour. Central America and South America, when we're working with third world countries, used a travel agency, and they were unbelievable. There were at the hotels They had the hotels set up. They had guides set up. They had people that gave us our itineraries. People picked us up and took us back. We didn't have to worry about anything except when we were exploring, as I'll go through later, as we're exploring the city of Cuzco. We understood the city on our own, and we could figure out the city on our own. But the big major sites, the Inca sites, we had tours of. But that's a highly planned trip.
Now, when you went to Norway, as I recall, you were kind of loose about things. And then when you went to Italy, you were kind of, well, we've got to check this more. We got to check the boxes and see the sites. And you were a little disappointed in that approach.
Well, do you know the difference between those three trips?
No.
Two of them were with my wife, and one was by myself.
Okay, all right.
My wife likes to know. And I'll tell you, I've got to tell you folks that there are three types of accommodations. There's probably more than three, but three major types. There's hotels. There are, believe it or not, apartments, and then there's Airbnbs. Everybody knows about hotels, and everybody knows about Airbnbs, but very few people know about apartments.
I didn't know.
And I don't know the website. I wish I knew the websites my wife looked up, because my wife takes care of it. She looks through so many websites, gets the area that we want to be in, and she takes a look at the room, calls the people, has you know, it's like buying a house online. It's renting a place. But for instance, it may sound a bit high, but our apartment, which was a one-bedroom apartment, fully kitchen, fully equipped, with a view, and it was $140 a night. And a hotel, if you're in the same place in a hotel, it's going to be like $300 a night. Mm. And you have this apartment, your entire stay that we would be in the apartment is like two or three. We were eight nights in an apartment, and that would have been equal to two or three days in a hotel. And the apartments, you have everything you want. Many times we've had, in Budapest, we had a two-bedroom apartment with a view that was just magnificent of the river and Ferris wheels and cathedrals. And it was brand new. So I really recommend to folks, if you're going to travel, take a look into apartments. And if you're going to stay even 2 days, but if you're staying three or more days, definitely get an apartment. And this one had a special key with a doorman, so it was very secure. We were very safe. They have safes inside of them. It was absolutely wonderful.
Never heard of that. I didn't know that you could get. I thought an apartment would be just like an Airbnb, somebody's place that they were renting. I didn't know there was a specific category like a long-term stay place.
Well, it's even shorter term. They have minimum stays of perhaps two nights, and they completely take care of you. Now we're talking there about the highly planned adventure, your highly planned foreign trip, and then we have my loosely planned, which was, we can use Scandinavia as an example, and I stayed in Airbnbs, except for when I was on the Northern Lights trip, and I used a group, because you have to use a group to go with the group to see the Northern Lights.
Right.
If you want a chance to see the Northern Lights, you go with the group.
Because they know when and where and all that.
Exactly, right. And they have three vans that are out searching. You're really not searching for the lights, you're searching for clear skies, so you can see the lights,
right?
Because it's cloud, when you have cloudy skies, you can't see anything. And they set up an apartment, but apart from that, I mean, they set up a hotel, but apart from that, I got an Airbnb in Switzerland, then I had an Airbnb, I booked an Airbnb in Copenhagen, and I, on my end of my stay, I booked an Airbnb in Oslo. So I had my places to stay, so I was secure in that, but I didn't even have my flights or any of my train reservations. I figured I'd get a plane somehow, I'd get a train somehow, and I'd figure it out, and I had no, like in any of, none of the three cities did I have a destination in mind. There was nothing I planned to see. There was no museums, there were no tourist attractions that I had to see in any of the cities. I went there, and I got a map of the city, and I talked to a couple of people, because I go to cafe bars, and I talk to people who speak English in cafe bars, and I say, what's cool to see in this town? And they'll tell me what's cool to see in this town. And that's a very loosely planned sort of vacation. That takes that's easy for someone to do on their own, a man or a woman to do on their own, or with a highly adventurous friend. But with a husband and wife, it typically is going to be a little bit more planned, but not always. It depends on the couple and how loosely planned they can be. But I do want to recommend that you take a look whenever you go anywhere. You take a look at apartments, because there are those are really fabulous gets. Fabulous gets. We've been doing this for 3 years now. Now what I want to talk about, believe it or not, and I have 14 points on this.
Goodness.
I think
14,
yes.
Right.
Well, but it's important. Packing. I'm going to talk about packing. And packing is important. I mean, as a matter of fact, I've been to classes on packing.
Can my wife tune into this? Because all she does is throw it all in a big box and figure it out later here. You know, I mean, she just literally, for she's pretty organized in life, but went on a trip for some reason, she literally just loads it up and just pours it out.
Well, one thing you have is that when you fly internationally, and we're talking about foreign travel right now, when you travel internationally, you're allowed one check-in. So that is a free check-in. You don't have to pay for that.
Right.
But there's a 50-pound limit on it.
Right.
And I'm telling you, my wife had 48 pounds, and that was a heavy son of a gun. That was a heavy bag. My bag was heavy. Mine was probably close to 38 to 40 pounds. And what I really want to really, really emphasize with everybody is pack as light as you possibly can. Take as few things as you can. Know this, you will always pack too much shit. It's just there's just no way that you. I took a jacket that we had seen the weather in Peru was supposed to be very cold, and the weather in Argentina was supposed to be very moderate to warm. So we were as if we were going to two different locations, and we had to take two different styles of clothes. I took one very heavy jacket that I never wore.
Hmm.
And I'm carrying around this jacket. It was probably a 4-pound jacket that I'm packing that I didn't need. So you take exactly what you think you would need. And so I even wrote down what I would take as clothing. If I were to do this trip again, we were 17 days, so we were 2.5 weeks. If I were to do this trip again, I would take 3 pants max. Max, and that's that way I have in all different colors, so I can do my clothing gig. I would take one jacket, 2 sweaters, 2 shirts, 2 nicer t-shirts, and then I like to take 7 socks and underwear, so I do laundry halfway in between. And if you do all different colors, that way you still have different outfits, and 3 different pants are plenty. There are times I wear the same pants 3 days in a row. Who's going to see you? Who's evaluating your dress? No one is evaluating your dress code.
They don't say in the morning, hey, you wore that yesterday. You can't come over here.
No. And my wife doesn't care. Now, there may be some places where you're going, if you're going to the opera or you're going someplace where you have to get dressed, that you do have to bring a coat and a tie. And that we were going to a couple special events, so I had to bring a coat and a tie. And that added, next time I discovered how casually they dress in Argentina, and so I was even without need of a coat and tie.
And do you try and make them interchangeable? I mean, are the pants something that all the shirts can go with, or is there, that's why I see too many people, they have an outfit. I like this pant with this shirt, this sweater, but it doesn't go with this pant and this shirt. They're totally different here.
Yeah, I try to make them interchangeable.
Right.
Yes, try to sew it. So it looks like I have different.
So this shirt with that pants, and this shirt with that pants, and this shirt with that pants, and then I can switch them all around, right?
Yeah, and men, it's much easier for men, but we can wear the same things 2 and 3 days in a row, and you know, not give a rat's behind, you know, what it looks like. What I want to talk about next, and this is important for you folks, I want to talk about electronics, and I want to talk about adapters and versus converters. Adapter. Every country, just about, with the exception of Peru, our American plugs will not fit into their plugs.
Mm.
They have a whole different plug-in system. So you can buy a little kit, little tiny kit that's an inch and a half wide and 3 inches long, and it has five adapters in it that fit most every country in the world. And you can plug your American plug into that adapter. Now, knowing all of your electronics, because they're typically, outside of the United States, is running 220 watts while we're running 110 watts.
Volts, right.
Volts, yes. And it will blow up your equipment, except it will not blow up your electronics. Your phone, your iPad, or any computer equipment, your notebooks, any of that, that's built in inside. They have converters built in inside, so they can take 220 volts.
Mm, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they can take 220 volts. But now, like a hairdryer cannot. So that's when you purchase, and these are a bit heavy. That's why I don't like them. But converters, and a converter will convert the 220 to 110. And then you use your hair dryers. My wife used it for her hair dryer, although most of the places we were at provided hair dryers, but her hair curlers, because she's got long hair and she's got to have hair curlers. You know, you can't not have hair
of
curlers.
Of course, come on, Charlie.
I mean, geez, let's get this straight.
That's right. Get your priorities straight here.
Yeah. And then another very handy thing that very few people know about, because I've not seen many people carry them, are there are traveling power strips. So I have to plug in, because as I will get into later, I take a phone, an iPad, and a MacBook. I take all three, and so I have to charge. Sometimes I have to charge all three. Well, my little power strip that I will use my adapter, plug my power strip in, and my power strip has only three. It doesn't have seven or eight. It has three plug-ins plus a USB adapter, so I can plug in a USB. So I can plug in four computer devices into this one, and I can only take up one plug. I don't have to look around the room for three different plugs and have that many different adapters. So I would really look at getting an international power strip. You must get adapters, and then consider, do you need a converter for hair curlers or hair dryers?
Two quick questions come to my mind. One, what do you do with these three electronic devices, Mac, laptop, iPad, and iPhone, when you're out and about? Do you just safely leave them in the room? Do you lock them up in a safe? Do you carry them with you at all times?
Good question. I have my phone, and I have it set up on international use where I use some data roaming. I use WhatsApp for most of my international. You can use, there's an app that's called WhatsApp, and you can call internationally for free with WhatsApp. I then use Wi-Fi in wherever I'm located, because the apartments that you get, the hotels that you get, the Airbnbs, when you check in, make sure they all have Wi-Fi ability. But their Wi-Fi is nothing like the United States. So given that, I would only need my telephone and my iPad, because I write. I journal a lot, and I write quite a bit, so I need an iPad. However, when I'm posting my blogs and my
radio shows,
podcasts, I need a computer. I have to have a large computer, so I use the large computer, not large, but I use the MacBook computer for that, and I leave that in the room, and it's safe in the room. They're double and triple locked. It's very safe in the room. There's also a safe in the room in which we put our passports and lock our passports up in a safe. But
can you tell me one safe story that wasn't so safe after all? I don't travel nearly as much as you do, but I used to travel a lot more in the United States, particularly in business. And one time I had, for some reason, I don't know, $500, something like that, in cash, not in traveler's checks. And I thought, you know, this is unusual. I'm going to take advantage of the safe in my room. I'm going to put it in there. That was the stupidest thing I could have done. I should have put it in my sock. They would enter if I found it in my sock. Whoever cleaned the room, that was the first place they went. They apparently knew how to get into that safe, and they went and took the $500. And I went down to the hotel, and they went, sorry, Charlie, you know, it's the way it goes.
Never heard of that.
Wouldn't call the cops, wouldn't do anything. And I thought, wow, you know, and I thought maybe that's just a sucker's bet to put it in the safe in the room because they've already pre-figured out how to get into that, and they know that they know exactly where to go to get to
you,
the
you jewels had a, and the cash. You had a terrible experience. That is not common. Okay. That is very uncommon.
It's broke me forever. Ever to this day, if I have cash or something, I'll stick it in a shoe rather than a safe.
Yeah, yeah. I always, for those of you who want to know how to rob from me, I put it on the inside pocket of a jacket.
There you go.
I put it on the inside pocket of a jacket, so they would really have to go through everything to find that. But
right.
But I do use the safe. Now, the reason I take an iPad is because I write when I'm on the road. And I don't want to carry a computer because a computer is too heavy. I no longer carry backpacks.
You don't like backpacks?
No, backpacks just too much stuff, and they make you look like a tourist.
To me, the tourist, right? Yeah.
And so you are prime real estate for pickpockets, which I wanted to get into later, but we'll get into right now. Put everything in your front pockets. Put your wallet. Mm. And your phone in your front pockets. It's much more difficult to steal from you out of a front pocket than a rear pocket. You won't feel it out of a rear pocket, but out of a front pocket, some guy starts messing with your private parts.
And, you're going to notice.
And you get a feeling there. You get a feeling. But what I take is I actually take a little bag that fits my iPad, and it fits a small book. And I carry it. It looks like a man purse,
mm-hmm.
and that is what I carry around town because I am always riding, so I'm always stopping.
Do you worry about
cafes.
The slash and grab? I've read about that where they used to do this with women's purses. Now they're doing with men's accessories, where somebody will come with a knife and they'll quickly cut the strap, the shoulder strap of the bag, and of course grab it. And run.
Yeah, yeah, you know
that's why they sell some with metal in them and
that,
stuff.
That can happen. You know, and there's nothing you can do when a thief makes up his mind that he or she is going to steal from you, they're going to steal from you. But that is so uncommon. That really is rare. We're talking like, I bet, less than 1% of people that have the slash and grab.
But didn't you lose a laptop or something on one of the trips? I thought, what?
Oh, I was, one was stolen, but that was my fault. Because I was carrying a backpack. That's why I no longer carry a backpack. And mm-hmm. I had to do some material, and I set the backpack down, and I made the mistake of setting the backpack behind me instead of in front of me. So somebody just walked behind, picked up the backpack.
Gone.
So I really, that's my fault. Now, fortunately, it was an iPad, and I was on iCloud, and I was able to erase all the data from the iPad. They still would have to have the code to get in, but even if they figured out the code, they couldn't get anything because I had that prepared. But I like to carry those little bags. Rather than, I used to carry the big bag, and I'd have a jacket in it, and I'd, you know, have an umbrella, and I'd have lunch, and who knows, whatever
else. A book.
And now all I have is this little bag that carries my iPad, a small book, and if it's chilly outside, I will wrap a sweater around my waist.
What about this RFID stuff?
Okay, so I wanted to get into that, too. Thank you for... You're getting a little bit ahead of me, but was there one thing I wanted to, you know, I've talked about backpacks. Be careful of backpacks because one thing you do, you look exactly like a tourist, unless it's a very small backpack that a local would wear. You know, it's just, and it just kind of hangs around. Don't carry, you know, these big American backpacks that says, you know, I'm a tourist and I have a lot of shit in here that you're going to want. But the RFID is really great, and the RFID... These are wallets, they're fanny packs, or they're these
neck
things
hanging.
That hang around your neck that you slip your passports in.
I like those.
Credit cards. But what the RFID does is that there now are scanners that without the RFID, they can scan your credit card number. They can scan it right through your wallet. They can get your credit card number. And have that. With the RFID, they cannot scan it. The RFID, there's something in the material that they put. So if you're traveling, always make sure you get, I have an RFID wallet, and my little pack with my iPad and all is an RFID. And those are, and they're making them extremely safe. It would take a slash and grab because it would not take, you would have to open so many zippers in order to get to anything. My wife even kept our passports when we were traveling in hers because it took three different zippers to get into where she was carrying our passports.
Two quick questions came to my mind as I'm looking at your list here that isn't on your list that I would think of. Should you check in with anybody at these embassies or anything? Does anybody need to know that there's an American in Peru, or you just rely on the
number one industry in Peru is tourism. They could give a shit if you're there.
Okay.
You know, so no, you don't check in with anybody. Maybe if you travel to Lagos, Nigeria,
yeah, right.
You might check in. But I went to Lagos, Nigeria, and I happened to go with Chevron, and they had guys with machine guns waiting for me,
right.
You know, to
yeah,
take
I always wonder,
so,
should you, you know, there's an embassy everywhere. Should you let them know, hey,
no,
we're going to be in the country for a week or something? Okay.
No.
And then on a really silly
but,
example.
But you do. But what you do let know is you let your ATM people know. That you're going
there
to be
go.
Gone, or otherwise your ATM will not work internationally.
Ah.
So
all of a sudden you appear in Peru, and they're like, oh, this can't be you.
And you have no money, and you can't get any money. You're screwed. So you make sure you let your bank know
really good tip. Yeah.
Where you're going to be, how long you're going to be. And we even had trouble with mine. They had to do it two or three times. Fortunately, my wife had hers, and hers worked. Otherwise, we couldn't have gotten any solace in That's what the currency is in Peru, is soles, and we couldn't have gotten any soles, which is 17 soles per dollar. So everything you had, all these
should
thousands
of dollars.
Should
you have the
dollars.
Local currency with you when you arrive, or do you just try and convert it when you get there? And if so, where? At the airport?
No, I will convert a small amount at the airport. When I say a small amount, maybe $100, I will convert at the airport because it has a lower rate at the airport. But that way I have cash, and I know I want to make sure I have enough cash for a taxi, and I find out
right.
what the taxi ride is. And then the first thing I look for is an ATM because the ATM are your best rates. You get your best rates.
I didn't even know you could get any out of an ATM. So you just go and punch it in like normal, and then out pops pesos or whatever you said.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. And exactly,
just,
whatever the local currency is.
And it's just
that's
deducted
what it gives you.
At whatever rate from your
exactly.
account.
Exactly. Yes. I talked about carrying your phone and your wallet in your front pockets.
Passport, what about that?
Your passport, that's where I said my wife has a special place that she puts her passports. And her passports are very, very safe.
Don't tell us.
Well, it's in a triple zipped place in a bag that she's carrying. So, if I told you couldn't get to it, she'd be nailing you. Now, if I do have to carry a passport, sometimes I'll have to put a passport on me. I put it behind my wallet in my front pocket.
Why would you have to, other than going through customs in and out of the country?
That's the only time.
Yeah.
That's the only time. And that's also something I wanted to talk about is... Do you carry, and I think I have it for later on, Paul, but let's go ahead and talk about it right now. But your passports overseas, there really is no need to carry your passport. You must show your passport to check into any lodging, whether it be a hotel, an apartment, and I believe even an Airbnb may ask for your passport. That's part of the regulation, and then you go about hiding your passport any way you can. Another very important thing is before you leave, make copies of all your important documents. So make a copy of your passport, make a copy of your credit card front and back, and make a copy of your driver's license front and back.
And do you have that with you, or do you keep that somewhere?
I keep that in a separate place.
Okay.
I keep that in a bag that stays in my room. So if for some reason I were to lose my passport or have problems, at least I would be able to show that I had a passport.
Where would you go? You go to the American consulate?
Yes.
You have to go.
Yes, we actually lost one 2 years ago. We lost our passports in Spain, and we had to go to the American consulate in Spain, and within 4 hours they had passports
for
us.
Wow.
It was absolutely amazing. Two more things that I want to mention on this, and then we're going to take a break. First is books. This is a time I hate electronic books. I like paper. I like
old school.
I'm an old soul. I like that. But this is the time you want electronics. So you, just because of weight, remember, we're trying to reduce weight, anything we can to reduce weight. So what I carry instead of electronics, I carry small books. I take the really small books that don't weigh a lot. And now, here's my final and
maybe the takeaway we've been saving
maybe
up here?
Even most important.
This is the big one we've been leading to?
Well, yeah, but there's all of these have been big, so I don't want to. But this is something you don't think about, and that is lost luggage.
Oh.
And that if you lose your luggage and it's been checked in and they sent it to the wrong place, you don't have change of clothes, you don't have toiletries.
Wow.
As me, I have medications that I have to take. I'm out of medications, and I learned that in Prague. We had in Prague, and we were out 3 days. And fortunately, which airline was it? I'd like to say the airline because they were so wonderful. I believe it was United, and they just covered everything. They said, whatever you need, just go out and buy it. We'll cover it. We'll take care of it. But what I take now is I will check in that bag. I will have another bag that has a change of clothes, that has my toiletries, and has all my medications.
And you carry that one with you?
I carry that on the plane. I carry that on the plane. So I have that all the time. If my luggage got lost, I have a jacket, I'm covered. I'm taken care of. And because what I need mostly are my toiletries and my medications.
Right.
I could live with the clothes, with the wearing the same clothes.
Right.
But that is really important. And that is, I call that the emergency bag if your luggage is lost. Not many people really do this, and I can't recommend it strongly enough with the people that our baggage gets lost in the baggage process. So why don't we, since we've covered quite a bit, and I have quite a bit more to cover, why don't we take a break and let me take a breath. Hi there, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and this is one of our solo-sodes that is titled Simple Tips for Foreign Travel. We just covered a lot of information, a lot of data on what you would do before you leave. Now, I know there was a list of a ton of things, and there's no way you can remember it, but don't worry, it's all in the show notes. All of this information will be in the show notes. You can read the show notes. And this is from my personal opinion. Now, we talked, that's before you leave, now after you arrive. I want to talk about getting your bearings. I want to talk about adapting to the culture. And then I want to talk about making nothing-to-do days, nothing-that-I-have-to-do days. So the first thing about getting your bearings is really important. Even if you're on a guided tour, you want to get your bearings. You want to understand where you are physically. Say we're in Buenos Aires, and we want to understand physically where are we compared to city center, compared to the museums that we want to see, the cathedrals that we want to see, the really exotic bridge that's there that we want to see. Get an idea of how far we are from there. I'm not a car guy. I don't get cars in foreign countries. I either use a taxi, an Uber, or I try to figure out mass transportation, which is you've got to be there for a while to figure out mass transportation. Unless you're really an experimenter, like my wife and I have gotten onto mass transportation and about halfway through discovered we're going the wrong direction.
Yeah, okay.
So we just got out and went the other direction and everything was fine. You know, you've got to have this comme ci, comme ça attitude. You can't have this attitude that I have everything under control, because you don't have everything under control. Life is under control. The universe is taking care of this. So just go out there and enjoy yourself. And I mostly walk personally, and I will walk 4 to 7 miles a day.
Wow.
Now the food was so good, Peru. I'll mention it later. The food was so good at Peru and Buenos Aires. I actually walking 4 to 7 miles a day. I gained 2 pounds. So that tells you what good walking does.
Yeah.
I probably would have gained 20 pounds had I not been walking. Also, number two, make a brief itinerary for your stay. If you hadn't done it before, and it can be as simple just as the place you want to visit the next day. Get the places, get an area that you want to stay and that you want to visit, and create a local itinerary. Thirdly, and this is my favorite, find a local cafe bar to hang out.
Mm. Your place. You're gonna make
your place,
right?
Your second home. I always have a second home, and I try to make a friend at the cafe bar, which is typically a server. And I will do a server. Now, tipping is really different in different countries. In some places, you don't tip at all.
Mm-mm.
And in some places, the max you tip, most places the max you tip is 10%. Well, I will give a 20% tip, and that way this server loves me. And this server is going to give me any information. It's going to kind of be my friend. And I have somebody there that I know that's a local that I know that I can ask about different information. And if the server is not aware of the information that I'm looking for, because I've been kind to the server will go out and find it from somebody else and give me the information. So I recommend finding the local place to hang out.
How do you do that? You just wander around? Do you ask somebody in the hotel, or you just feel your way through it?
Number one and number three. You walk around and you feel your way through it. You have to understand you are not in control. You think you're in control. You are not in control. And the less in control you are, the more enjoyable it is. The less you feel the need to control, unless you feel the need that I have to visit this place, I have to get to this place, it just becomes another, you might as well be back at work filled with stress.
Right.
This is, we want to go to this place. If we get there, great. If we don't get there, we'll do it another day, or we won't do it at all because we've never seen it. What difference does it make if we don't see it afterwards?
I'll never be back. This is my one chance to.
Yeah, and see, I've seen enough places now, Paul. I'm really a shitty tourist.
That's what you said. Huh?
I am a terrible tourist. I want to know the culture. I want to know the people and get involved with the people. That's why I like the cafe bar. I had my cafe bar in Peru, and I had my cafe bar in Argentina. In the Palermo district of Argentina, it was called the Tea Connection. And I decided I wanted to drink tea instead of coffee, which who knows why.
Yeah, they're not known for tea in Argentina.
Oh, but they are.
Really?
I thought it would be
coffee and espressos and all that stuff.
Well, that's everywhere except the United States. And coffee everywhere in the United States is just amazing. I don't know what we do with our coffee, why we can't make our coffee better and our coffee tastes like it tastes overseas, because both Peru and Argentina had just the finest coffee. But a final thing I would like to say on this, getting your bearings, be prepared to walk, I would say a minimum of 3 miles and up to 5 miles a day. We exceed that because we walk really a lot, but be prepared to walk. And don't walk like you're speed walking. I just wrote a post on mindful walking. And mindful walking is where it's like a dreamlike state where you're observing yourself walking and you're enjoying all the sights around you. And just even if you're in a non-touristy area, just enjoy the different styles of the apartment buildings, of the condos, of the houses, of the architecture of the buildings, of the people, of the way they're dressed, of the way they talk, how fast they talk, how slowly they talk. It's a wonderful, wonderful way to enculturate yourself.
You had a talk with your friend, was it Father Rob from the Episcopalian Church where you go,
right.
St. Margaret's?
Yeah, we just posted that post.
And he talked about that walk. That I forgot how you say it in Spanish, Compostelo or something.
Now you've got me mixed
Santiago,
up.
I know it was that.
Santiago.
It has something to do with St. James. Anyway, but they walk for days on this trail through the Pyrenees Mountains. And he said that's the whole point. It's you're not looking at anything. You're not going anywhere. It's just to be there and to observe and to stop and to sit under a tree. And
we need to do that every time when we're traveling, not just on the Camino de Santiago, I think it
maybe
is.
Maybe that was it. Yeah,
Camino, I think it is.
Camino de Road. Yeah,
yes, yeah. Camino de Santiago.
But we got to get somewhere. We're going somewhere. We got to get there.
And that is
2 days.
That is the American thing. So you segued me into my next point about adapt. Don't get pissed off when it takes forever to get a check at a restaurant, because they will not give you a check until you ask for it.
Mm.
You could sit there all night.
Really?
You could sit there all night. Meals, in their mind, are to be savored, not devoured, especially with good company. In the United States, we're so hardwired to do everything in a hurry. We eat in a hurry. We chew in a hurry. We eat while we're walking. We don't sit down with company and just actually... mindfully, there's another thing that I'm into that's called mindful eating, and that's really trying to taste each bite. And that slows down the amount you eat. It's good for your weight. It's just a whole different style. And so, when you're in a foreign country, Italy is il canto, and Spanish is el cheque. And you just ask for el cheque, por favor, and they'll bring you the check. And they will take your credit card, and they deal with it right at the table. They bring the little machine. They put your chip right at the table. And you have to tip in cash because there's no way to tip there. Mm. So if there is a tip in Peru, there was no tips, but we gave a little bit of money. And in Argentina, it was a 10% tip.
Can I throw out one? I don't know why I remember this. We had somebody coming out a couple years ago talking about traveling to Asia. This was for business travel. And he said his company sent him to take a class on things not to say, the typical ugly American stupid things that Americans say. And this one always stuck in my mind. Don't say, as you're frustratedly fumbling through this local currency, how much is that in real money? People say that. Or how much is that in real
money? I can't believe anybody would say that.
How much is that in real money?
You know, they should be right away, get their passports, put them on a plane, and send them home.
Never forgot that.
You know, tipping is different in every country, and you want to learn about tipping, and it's from zero, typically 0 to 10%. And what I do is I ask a local. I just will ask a local, what is protocol here?
Mm-hmm.
Someone that speaks English, how much do I tip? Well, at a restaurant, you will tip 10%. And if you're tipping a taxi driver, there is, like in Argentina, do not tip a taxi driver. You don't leave tips.
Mm-hmm.
That's just plain. So someone, you know, ask a local, and they're happy to give you that kind of information.
When I was in Ireland, I've only been one or two places outside the country, and started to tip, and they said, oh, no, you know, people get insulted if you tip here. It's part of their job. They get paid to do this. They don't see that as...
Exactly. So we know...
It's condescending. Senators like, here's some extra money. I'm rich. You're not, you know.
You keep leading me into what I want to say next, that's the next one is try to act like a local.
Yeah.
Find out what locals are like. And I tell you what's really funny. In Latin countries... dinner is often very late.
That's what they say, yeah.
That dinner is 10 to 11. I remember going to a restaurant at 9 o'clock, and there was no one in there. I was in Spain. There was no one in the restaurant. I thought it was a really good restaurant, and I thought, oh, my goodness. You know, I had heard it was a really good restaurant. I must have heard wrong. This is a terrible restaurant. Well, I sat there for a couple hours, and before I know it, there's a waiting line to get in. But the waiting line to get in started at 10:30 at night.
Crazy.
So since 10 and 11 is the busy time, we Americans, if we make a 7 o'clock or 7:30 reservation, we're pretty easy sure to get in because there's nobody that goes at that time. And so you can get into the restaurant and you're sitting either alone or in a very sparse crowd. Now, if you're into nightlife, go at 10 o'clock. That's when the action starts happening. That's when the bars are opening. Everything is going. Because they're not starting work till 9 o'clock the following morning. And then they're taking a 2 or 3 hour siesta. And they get off work then at 7 o'clock. They go have a couple drinks. They go have dinner and have a couple more drinks. And then go to sleep and start the next day.
Do you ever worry about eating, particularly outside the big restaurants? If you just, would you ever eat off the street? Would you ever eat a cart or anything?
No,
like that?
No, I don't. I personally don't eat off the streets. I don't drink water except in Europe. In Argentina, we were told that the hotel water is clean and no problem drinking hotel water, so we did. But most of the time, we buy, since we have apartments, we buy 24 bottles of water because we each drink at least, you know, a quart to a half gallon of water a day anyway.
Right, right.
So you always use that. And I don't buy off vendors. You have to be careful of anything that has water. So you have to be careful of fruit. You have to be careful of anything with leche, with milk. You have to be careful with ice creams.
Ice cubes sometimes.
Cubes are water.
Yeah. I was in Mexico and you're like, oh, we got to get margaritas. We got all this other drink. No, it's all filled with the water that's not going to leave you with a good taste.
Yeah.
Leave you with a problem.
Not going to be good for you.
My favorite story, I had a partner who was very continental, very international, and traveled all over the world. Born in Asia and grew up in Europe and all these places. He just tells the story of going to a famous resort in Mexico, high end. And they said, oh, senor, the water is fine here. He said, we bring it to you every day.
Never in Mexico.
And he said, okay. And he got up early one morning to go jogging or something. He saw them filling up the so-called safe water with garden hoses down there in the corner.
Yeah. Never in Mexico. I would never drink the water in Mexico. It's just, you know, for the locals, they're used to it.
Yeah,
their gastronomy is used to it. Our stomach is not used to the parasites.
Right.
So it's crazy. The last thing I had on adapt. Oh, no, it's not on that. It's on by itself is make nothing you have to do days.
Now that I never heard of. You got me there.
Make nothing you have to do days.
Every moment is so precious. The money's you're burning through it at so much per minute and so much per hour and so much per day. And
when you're 17 days, you're going to kill yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to kill yourself. So plan days with no agenda. Just sleep late. Plan on sleeping as late as you can. Get up and walk around your neighborhood. My wife and I, we like to pick a couple of days where we go out part of the time, not an entire day, but half a day, we go out by ourselves. My wife loves to go shopping. I hate to go shopping. And she loves to go in little knick-knacky stores. I want to shoot myself.
Oh, look, honey, look at this.
Yeah. Oh, are you kidding? I like to go to, I really like to go to cafe bars where I will have espresso, I have cafe con leche, or what they have there, it's called cortadas, which is espresso with a little bit of milk, and then I get a sparkling water, and I sit there and write.
Not worried about the milk?
No, I don't worry about the milk. Probably should, but I don't.
Okay.
Because it's not hurt me yet.
So, okay.
So I've been okay. This is one of those ones, be led by your gut. And sometimes just get out and intentionally get lost. There's many times I'll take a look at a map and I'll go and I'll look at northwest and say, I want to go that way.
Wow.
And I have no idea. And I'm just walking streets that way. And then after I've walked 2 or 3 miles, I'll take a look at a map and take a look at the streets and see where I'm at and see, is there anything around there? And I'll just
drop
walk
a couple
back the
thousand
way.
Bucks and hours to just wander around this way and that way?
Yes.
Wow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Be led by your gut. Now, what I want to do is we are running late, but, you know, I'm going to let this go late because I want to tell you about the trip.
Please.
The trip was amazing. Peru, I can't highly recommend enough that you visit Peru, and there are 3 or 4 things that are really important about Peru. Number one, incomparable food. The food is just unbelievable. My wife wanted to take cooking classes, but was afraid if she took cooking classes that she would learn how to cook, but she couldn't get the ingredients here that they have in Peru.
Well, I told you, my experience, we're here across from South Coast Plaza, and there's an international selection of restaurants around the area here, and there's a Peruvian one here, and I've been shocked at how good it is and how diverse it is. I didn't realize there's Japanese cultures there, and there's other people that have, because of the fishermen that came for some reason from Japan, there's a large contingent there. And all these different cultures have come together in Peru. I thought it was just like any typical South American.
No, the food is absolutely amazing. And then the city to visit in Peru for the tourist, and tourism is the number one industry in Peru. So they live for us, and that's Cusco. Cusco, Lima is the capital now. Cusco was the capital under the Incas. And Cusco is a fabulous place that is built. The bottom parts of the buildings are built by the Incas. Then the Spanish came, and the Spanish introduced two-story houses. Mm-hmm. So they would ruin some of the Inca work and put their houses over the top of it. But nevertheless, it's a magnificent city. You can spend, and that's a walking city. That's where it was half a mile into town, half a mile. So it's 2 or 3 miles, and really after you get used to walking, 2 or 3 miles is nothing, because you're not walking necessarily 2 or 3 miles straight and huffing and puffing.
It's not worried about safety, getting mugged or jumped or
no, nothing. It's a very very, very safe place. And it, safety in any country is pretty logical. You can tell when you're in an unsafe area. You can tell if you're in a slum area and there's a bunch of kids hanging around, 10 or 12 kids hanging around, and you say, I'm not in the right place. And
particularly when the way they look at you. If they look at you like, are you nuts?
I don't even.
That predatory look, kind of like, oh, wow, we got a live one here,
I never get that far. I don't even look at them. I'm gone. The third thing I wanted to talk about is that we got to see the famous Machu Picchu, which is the height of the Inca civilization, which was 1100 to 1532, when the Spanish...
Under Pizarro.
I don't even know what I want to call the Spanish. The conquistadors, the conquest, the total assholes. that came and ruined this culture that was absolutely amazing. Their temple structures, Paul, their temple structures are made of stone, and the stone is cut so perfectly for the temples, not for every place, but for the temples. The stone is cut so perfectly that it fits exactly on top of each other with no mortar, and there's no light in between, no space in between. It's perfect. It was as if it was sawed by something.
And did they have just stone tools or metal tools? I mean, how did they get it that precise?
Stone tools. They didn't have metal. Yeah, it was all stone tools.
So to take a rock and to chop it that precisely that it would fit together perfectly is still a mystery and amazing.
Yeah. And it would take 100 years to build a city. And it was part of everybody's job, and it was their honor to build the city. The structures are absolutely amazing. I'm sure most of you have seen pictures of Machu Picchu. It doesn't do it justice. Yeah, what's odd? It's way on top of a mountain. It's 8,000 feet, but Cusco, the capital city, is closer to 12 to 13,000 feet.
That. Yeah, I thought.
So you're actually going down from Cusco to Machu Picchu, and you have to watch the altitude sickness. Mm-hmm. And all that really means is you chew cocoa leaves or you buy these little cocoa candies, and the cocoa really is...
A little pick-me-up.
No, it has no feel, and it's not like taking cocaine.
But they do have something. It's like a little stimulant that they put in leaves or something.
Yeah, yeah. And they have cocoa tea, and it's not cocoa. It tastes completely different. It's not like chocolate.
No.
It tastes completely different.
It's similar to cocaine, right?
but it helps acclimate you, and it's very good. The one thing I want to talk a little bit about in Picchu in the Inca culture, and I'm looking at our time here, and so I have to really kind of rush through this, and that's a thing called Pachamama. Mm. Pachamama is the Inca religion, if we want to call it religion. And there's Hanapacha, Kaipacha, Ukupacha. Hanapacha is the sky. Kaipacha is the earth. Ukupacha is beneath and inside. Mm-hmm. So it's beneath the earth, it's the roots, it's the seeds, it's what's far beneath the earth, and it's also what's inside of the human being. The ukupacha is our insides, our soul, our spirits, our guts, whatever we want to call it. And it is a magnificent, magnificent philosophy of life. And the idea is to live in harmony with Pachamama, to live in harmony with the earth. And in Christian terms, it would be living in harmony with God's creation, in which in the first chapter of Genesis we are commanded to do.
How did that work out with the Spanish? Did they have the same harmonic view of civilization?
Well, see, that brings me to the next thing, is that the Spanish Inquisition not only stole all the gold off the temples, destroyed the people, but they also did something that I really, as a Christian, I really find troubling, and they forced people to become Catholics. You didn't have a choice.
For their own good.
Yes. And they got to pay money to the church.
So it's a
political system. But that they forced people. But what the Incas did is it's called syncretism. And they combined the two religions. They combined this Pachamama with the Catholicism. Now what's really interesting is Mother Mary, they had a hard time taking Mother Mary as the mother of God, as the mother of Jesus, and they took her as Pachamama, as Mother Earth. And everything is built in these quadrangles, and I wish I could explain what a quadrangle is, but look it up and you'll see what a quadrangle. And in this one chapel, all of the Marys, all of the photographs and the sculptures of Mary were done in quadrangles, which was symbolizing Mother Earth. And there was one chapel that actually had a pregnant Mary.
What? Never saw that.
Yes.
I'm a good Irish Catholic. I've never seen that.
Had a sculpture of a pregnant Mary, and all of the chairs that proceeded from this sculpture, all the chairs on the handles had pregnant Marys on the handles, which was really...
Some symbolism in there I miss on here. Well, but that's fertility. That's the Mother Earth and abundance and giving forth. And
honoring that. And honoring the earth.
We couldn't even say the word pregnant on television, you know, until the 1970s or 80s. You could not say the word pregnant. When Lucy was pregnant, they couldn't say she was pregnant and I love Lucy.
They had to say she was with child
or something. Could not say that word.
No. I was very moved by Pachamama, and I was very moved by living in harmony with the earth. And I find it very, for those of us, last week we had a very Christian sort of talk. I find this very fits into our Christian philosophy, and that this is God's creation, and we're living in harmony with God's creation, and living in harmony and respecting it and understanding it. And I could tell you so many stories that we don't have time to go on, but I could tell you so many stories about the Incas, but they're a fabulously fascinating culture. And as you had pointed out, it's all the same time, the Incas, the Aztecs, the Mayans.
The Mayans,
there was something going on with these cultures that's where we get the
the chariots of the gods, how did people learn to build these temples with stone tools? Why did they build these temples? Well, that's the whole theory of the chariots of the gods.
But it took 100 years to build a temple. It would take that long to roll, and they showed how they rolled them. So they showed that it was not alien technology. It was just hard ass work. That's all there was to it. Now, Let's end up our conversation here with Argentina, and I want to just tell you, for those of you who think about visiting Argentina, I just want you to know that you go into all of your travel guides, and they're going to tell you to stay in Palermo or Rialto, which are really nice areas. They're really good, but they're a long way from city center. They're 10 to 20 minute taxi rides to city center. So I would suggest if you ever go to Argentina, stay in Centro. That's a district. They're all districts within. There's 13 million people in Buenos Aires. Wow. It's almost as big as Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So you want to live El Centro, and in the central part where the Cathedra Evita is famous for, and Peron, and a number of different places are very important there. We spent 8 days there. That was too long. I would plan if you were going to Buenos Aires, unless you have relatives or a special thing to attend, that you think of 3 days, 4 nights is plenty in Buenos Aires, especially if you stay in Centro. You will cover everything you need to cover, but one thing you have to do, and we're going to sort of conclude our conversation with this. One thing you have to do is you have to plan on 1 night and 2 days to go to the Iguazu Falls.
Yes.
The Iguazu Falls was the highlight of our trip. It's 1.7 miles of falls that drop 200 to 300 feet. And there's one place that you can get within 100 feet of the crashing falls. I've heard it say, so I'm going to tick off my New York friends and Canadian friends, that they compare Niagara Falls to someone peeing compared to Iguazu Falls. Because Iguazu Falls, on some list, is on the seven natural wonders of the world. It's
not just high, it's wide.
It's high, it's wide, it's powerful.
Yeah.
There's mist that goes up hundreds of feet in the air that from the falls falling down onto the water. It is just, it's spectacular. So, friends, I wanted these were a few tips that I've learned, and a little bit about our trip to Argentina and Peru. My final thoughts are just a couple of other practical things. If you can, even if you're not a journaler, journal daily. Even if it's a paragraph or two paragraphs, just journal about your feelings about it. It helps bring to memory. You can go back and take a look at it, and it helps you remember and reminisce on the wonder of the place. And secondly, apart from everything else kind of talk, some of us have a difficult time adjusting to time zones. I want to be careful of anybody that has addictions or anything like that, but take a sleeping pill so you can sleep, especially if it's a long time difference.
That's my problem.
So take a sleeping pill so you'll go to sleep, and then within 2 days you will be unjet lagged. You will be right where you want to be. I hope this podcast has been helpful. I hope it's been interesting for you. It was a magnificent trip, which I plan to take more later. My next one is, Paul, is to Ireland, and your good friend, the Scottish.
Oh, my goodness. You're going to go to Ireland? Oh, you go.
Yes.
We'll talk much more about that one.
Yes. Yeah, that's the next trip after I go to Uganda in January.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to recommend everybody. Let me just close with this. People say, Charlie, you have money, and which we don't, but we have enough. You have money. You can afford to do this. We can't afford to do this. Well, let me tell you about two single moms. I have a single mom who has two children in high school and took 1 week off to go hike the Grand Canyon. She just took a week off, and she figured out how to do it. I have another mom who has two children in high school. She makes low wages, does not make a lot, but she plans an annual trip. We interviewed her on the podcast, and it was Shauna Sopko. And she travels once a year to a different country of the world and figures out how to do it on $1,200 or less.
Amazing.
So, you know, save $25 a week, and you too can visit another country, which all of us in America need to do. So I want to say goodbye. Thanks for listening. And we have a very exciting guest for next week, which I won't tell you now, but I'll tell you when we do it. So take care. See you soon.